Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Hopefully this story can get out and someone praying would, I don't know, maybe remember this story. I mean, how does someone vanish just like that at that age?
I just remember as a kid, like yesterday, like when we would laugh and I remember the pain that she would share with me, like when her dad got married and the happy moments that we shared with my grandmother before we would go to church and the dumb things we would do to give my grandmother a hard time, and I could hear my grandmother's laughter.
It's been 35 years. It's been 35 years. I want justice for her, you know. We want to know what happened to her. Her demeanor and her personality, she was such a docile, loving, kind-hearted girl.
I've always had this hole in my heart, you know, and I think not knowing always just hurts more than long as you know someone has passed, you know how to cope with that. And if you know that that person is living a different life somewhere else and alive and well, then that's okay too.
15-year-old Angelica Longoria, or Angel as she was known to those close to her, disappeared from El Monte, California on November 23, 1985. At the time, Angel was living at home with her father, stepmother, brothers, and step-siblings. The household was very strict, and when Angel was caught with a boy, she was punished physically. According to Angel's father and stepmother, Angel ran away that night, never to be seen or heard from again. Over the years, some family members have begun to wonder if there's more to this story of what happened to Angel Longoria back in November of 1985. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 239 of The Vanished, Angelica Longoria's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Angel's story is one that has been mostly forgotten with the passage of time over the past 34 years, except for a handful of family members who continue seeking answers. If you look through newspaper archives, you won't find any mention of Angel. For the police, she was just a 15-year-old girl who ran away in the 80s. In order to piece together Angel's story, we had to talk to as many people as we could find, since there isn't any archival information available. At the time of her disappearance, much of Angel's family was fragmented due to geographical distance or family issues. What her various family members were told about her disappearance and when can vary, but it's important to listen for those variations throughout the interviews. Back in 1985, Angel was living at home in El Monte, California with her father, stepmom, and siblings. In order to understand Angel's life at the time, we have to go back several years to when Angel's parents got divorced. We spoke to Angel's Aunt Irma. Angel and her siblings had lived with Irma for a period of time growing up. Irma told us about the breakdown of the relationship between Angel's parents and how she stepped up to help the children.
My sister and her husband, it was a rocky marriage, you know, there was physical abuse, you know, verbal abuse. So they ended up getting divorced. I am in El Paso, Texas. So when my sister and her husband, which is Angel's parents, when she's my oldest sister, they lived in California in East Los Angeles, and then they came back to El Paso and lived for a while. And then they went back to California and they had four kids. Angel has three siblings, one older sibling, a boy, and then it's Angel, and then her brother, Gabriel, and then her brother, Gus, who lives in El Monte, California. And so when their parents got divorced, my sister came over here for a while, and I lived at the time with my parents, and I was studying, getting my education as a teacher, to become a teacher. So I lived with my parents with my two daughters at the time, and my sister, one day, she had come over here to El Paso. She was trying to get herself right, I guess, because ever since just her whole marriage, and she just, her mind wasn't right, whatever. So she had given me, not custody, I want to say custody of, the kids, but I like power of attorney of all four of them. And this was 1981, and I was 24 at the time, and I was studying. They stayed with me, I want to say about 6 months. And she was like in California and then back in El Paso, and she was just everywhere. One day, my mom told her, hey, you know, what are you doing? You know, your sister's studying here and going to school, and you're running around doing, I don't know what, trying to get yourself together, but she's over here taking care of your kids. Of course, my parents helped me with them. She just got upset and said, well, I'm taking my kids to their father. My children aren't going to be a burden to anyone and blah, 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 you know. So she left, went back to California, and she left the kids with their father. So this was 1981, okay? Her demeanor and her personality, she was such a docile, loving, kind-hearted girl. She was just quiet and just really loving, a loving, loving, adorable little girl. So the last time I saw her, she was, what, 9 maybe? Almost 10? She was just kind-hearted, quiet, kind of shy, but she was just adorable.
We also spoke to Angel's cousin, Rebecca. Angel and Rebecca were born only about 4 months apart, so they grew up with a very close bond. Rebecca told us more about Angel's childhood.
My cousin was born February 24th of 1970, so she reached her marker of being 50 years old versus, you know, being gone at 15 as a teenager. That's a very, very, very long time. I know that we had a pretty rough upbringing by both our parents and family. From what I remember growing up with my cousin Angel, we were more like sisters than anything because I didn't have any sisters growing up. So her immediate brothers were my brothers. She was my sister because we spent a lot of time together. My uncle and his wife divorced, and then they left at a very young age. But then I remember them coming back to LA to live here after the divorce with my uncle. During that time of our upbringing, our grandmother was very much involved. She really was the one that really, really took care of all of us, really, to ensure that, you know, we had things to eat, we had stuff to eat, just bringing up like a different household value, different than what at least I was brought up, and then Angel as well. So growing up, it was a tough time for, I think, both of us. She had a different scenario going on in her life versus mine. Her scenario, I remember, it was fun times because my uncle lived with my grandmother. And so we were always there at my grandmother's house. And during the time of my grandmother's house, you know, who doesn't want to go to the grandmother's house, right? Because it's always so fun. And we were able to almost do almost anything. Back in those days, we were just able to, you know, go outside, run around, run on our skateboard, skates and stuff like that. So then my uncle met somebody at that time when Angel and her brothers, they all lived, and my uncle lived with my grandmother at the time. My uncle had dated quite a few women, and for the most part, they were all pretty much very accepted. And they were very fun to be with, and, you know, they were very accepting of all of us, because I was always included in that. It was a great time during those times. But then he met another woman
by the name of Margaret. And my uncle's name is Gilbert, by the way, which is my dad's younger brother. And they got together, they seen each other for a while, and then he married her. She was okay. She had two sons of her own that she was raising. It was okay. It was nothing majorly special, at least to us as kids back then. Because, you know, as kids, we would talk about it, and we would talk about, like, which girl did we like that my uncle dated more. And there was one that always stood out more than what she had stood out. But, you know, as a kid, you just go with the flow. And they ended up getting married, and Angel and the brothers, they were part of the wedding. But then they got into this religious thing about being Christians, which, you know, we were brought up pretty much, at least I was brought up and along with my cousins and with my grandmother's beliefs as Pentecostal. And, you know, they were pretty out there and outrageous, the Pentecostals. But at the same time, when my uncle got married to Margaret, my uncle, he received the Lord and started living a different way. And he didn't live maybe the wild life anymore, whatever he was doing.
As a child, Rebecca didn't quite understand what was going on with the changes in her family after her uncle's religious transformation. But she was seeing new restrictions that Angel had to live by.
We didn't know everything because, of course, we were kids. This just became, I don't know, it was a little bit not normal to us. Because at that point, all of a sudden, my cousin Angel wasn't allowed to wear pants. And we kind of thought that was kind of weird. And we were like, okay, can't wear pants. Why? So then it was like, well, the Bible says this and that. She had to wear only dresses. And the dresses that she wore look like a little house in the prairie. So she had to dress like that. So instead of going from a child, like a kid at that age, you know, you're like in jeans, Vans, tennies, and t-shirts, or, you know, cute little tops. So it went from all of that to wearing dresses at school. And she was mortified. So she would call me, and I would tell my dad at the time, you know, oh my God, Angel has to wear these dresses. They're ridiculous.
For Angel, being forced to dress this way was embarrassing, and she began to get ridiculed at school because of her clothing. Rebecca remembers times when she secretly brought Angel clothes before school to help her avoid being teased.
My dad was just like, you know, that's ridiculous at the time. And we were just like, what is going on? Like, all these things started changing in their household. It was like beyond. It was kind of like he lost focus of what reality was, and he started focusing only on certain things that were just kind of absurd. So what I would do, I would take the bus from Boyle Heights, and I would take it all the way to El Monte to meet her early in the morning just to get her stuff, jeans, t-shirts, and stuff like that. And then sometimes my dad would drive me in the morning, and then we would take clothes to her so that, you know, she can wear some of my clothes. It was embarrassing. Kids would start making fun of her at school because she would, you know, like, why are you dressed that way? She was the only one dressed like that in El Monte. She started having a complex of everything, how she was growing up and the stuff that she was wearing. She started having those issues.
Rebecca told us that, as a young teen, Angel stepped into a mother role for her younger brothers because they weren't being treated the same as their stepmother's children. Angel was a nurturing girl and tried to fill the void for her brothers.
She also had another life that she also had to live, which was really sad because she had to raise both of her younger siblings, which was Gus and Gabriel. And she was a mother to them because Margaret was not, in my eyes as a kid, to me, was not a mother. She was there as a stepmother, but she wasn't there as, you know, like a mom, like a role mom. A lot of times what I've seen and what I remember is that Margaret's two kids, they would be separated from my cousin Angel, my cousin Gus, and Gabriel. They had, I would say, a better life because at times I recall one time my dad getting really upset
and they had found out that they all went to a restaurant and left the kids behind, left my cousins behind, Angel, Gus, and Gabriel, while Margaret and her two boys and Gilbert, my uncle, they all went to go eat. So there was like a separation of that kind of stuff going on at the house. And the reason why we would know is because the kids, you know, at that time would call my dad and my grandmother and say, you know what they're doing? They left us at home.
Things weren't easy for Rebecca at this time either, but all of the kids relied on each other and their grandmother for support.
My dad at the time was not in very sound mind because he had his own issues. He started drinking a lot and doing drugs a lot. So it became really difficult also for me to live under his conditions. So that's why my grandmother was involved a lot. And we turned to our grandmother a lot to tell her everything that was going on at our house because she was our, you know, safe haven for us. So the kids would call me or call my dad because regardless of my dad still being the way he had started drinking and stuff and getting into drugs, they still had like a comfort level with my dad. So then my grandmother would call my dad and say, hey, you know, the kids are left alone, stuff like that. Angel's having to cook and clean the house for them. It was like that kind of atmosphere where they were a family, but they were still kind of separated.
As time went on, these changes that they were seeing in Angel's family started to appear to be more cult-like.
Everybody knew it. But, of course, they would never admit to this. It just became more and more obvious. Like, you know, it was, oh, my God, that's like Satan stuff. Like, that just, you know, was devil stuff. I mean, it was just becoming more to us as like a cult than versus, you know, really turning your life around. You know, you're really going to church and trying to be that good person. It just, everything was just turned around. And the crazy part is, it affected my cousin Angel a lot. Her appearance, she didn't feel like she could be like a regular 15-year-old teenager. There were just like a lot of mental games in that household that went on to the point where I wish I would have had that letter, but there was a letter that I believe Margaret had wrote to my dad apologizing for the way she acted and the way she was. And I really wish I would have had that letter because it would have been proof of how ridiculous she acted towards my cousin, being the other female in the house. And we always said that Margaret always had this type of jealousy towards my cousin because she was the other female.
Life at home was not a healthy environment for Angel and her siblings, but they didn't have much of a choice because their mother had her own issues as well.
My aunt, which is their mom, not aunt related by blood, but by marriage, because she had married my uncle. She was just off and just, unfortunately, just an absent parent. You know, she got involved into drugs and involved into a whole lot of other stuff. She was in jail. She married her first cousin. And I know for a fact, because I was there too, when the mom was show up, you know, with some crazy biker guy. And she had just gotten out of jail and she would come see the kids. Not only did they have it pretty crappy at home because they had to deal with the stepmother and their father was going along with the little games that the stepmother was doing. Then they had to deal with the absent mother that, you know, had her own life in shambles. And that totally affects someone at that age because I remember it affecting me. Just remembering all that, I think a lot of people would understand, you know, it was just pretty sad and confusing. And the good thing is that our grandmother always turned things around to give us hope and give us some type of laughter and peace through all of everything that was going on because she really didn't have a mean bone in her body. And everything that came out of my grandmother's mouth, you know, was always positive. And try to see the positive in everybody, like literally in everybody. But as a kid and you're growing up and you're seeing all these things, all these changes that you know is not right. And when you hear your cousins crying and feeling frustrated because they felt abandoned. And as for myself going through, you know, what they were going through as well, I was having my own issues because of my father's
drug abuse and alcoholism. Just dealing with that was just really difficult. And they had to also see when they would come over my house, they also had to see my father going through his changes as well. But at the same time, he still tried his best to love all of us and to care for us to the best of his ability. That wasn't the case all the time because, again, he had his own issues that he was going through. That made it just really difficult for everybody. And I know that it made it difficult for my cousin having to move out of my grandmother's house and now having to, you know, share a home with two other kids and a stepmom. I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's not the easiest in a household. I know it's not. Having to go through all that just brought up a lot of issues where the kids were really unhappy, like I said, and just the separation in the house alone, just at that age, it's just really hurtful and demeaning to the kids at that point. I mean, my cousin Angel was always cleaning and cooking and doing things for the boys, for her younger brothers. And we always said, you know, oh my God, like, Angel, what is she, a slave? She's not their maid. You know, we would always say things like that.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Rebecca remembers that as a teen, she would overhear conversations between the adults and her family regarding their concerns for Angel and her brothers, but they were limited in what they could do to change the circumstances.
I would hear the concerns that my grandmother had. I would hear the concerns that my other uncle had. And then I would hear the concerns about my father, how he was concerned for the kids. And, you know, my father would say that my uncle made the worst decision in marrying this woman. And then I remember the kids also saying, growing up, saying, God, I wish my dad would have married his girlfriend that he had. And her name was Becky. And she was just like the funnest person ever. We would always say as kids growing up, even when my cousin disappeared, we would always say if my uncle would have stood with that woman, Becky, it probably wouldn't have been a perfect marriage. But for sure, we would have had my cousin Angel because she was more realistic when it came to life. I mean, who wants to dress their child up in clothing like that? Like literally, it was up to her neck and then all the way up to her ankles. She would have to wear a dress. I would run away from home, honestly, if I had to dress like that. I mean, there was no way that I was going to go to school like that, and kids would make fun of me. So we always had to hide around and get her clothes. You know, I would have like rock shirts, like Iron Maiden or Guns N' Roses shirts. And, you know, she liked all that. So they were always sneaking to do things behind their backs because they felt that they couldn't live like that normal life. It was already not normal because, of course, they went from living to my grandma's house to now living with, you know, a whole new setup. And then the setup wasn't exactly what grandma had for them. She started having those issues. And then issues of, you know, when you're at 15 years old, you know, you start recognizing boys or boys like you and stuff like that. You know, your typical young teenage years.
Right before her disappearance, Angel was introduced to a boy, and that created conflict within their strict religious household.
I know that Margaret had a niece by the name of Ruby, and she started coming around a lot to Margaret's house visiting her aunt. She was about the same age as we were, like 14, 15 years old, around that age. And she started coming around, but she was a little bit more, she was way more advanced than any of us. She had already lost her virginity. She was already being with different boys and, you know, doing stuff that we like only hear about at school, like our friends that had more freedom than us. And I believe she's the one that brought over a guy, and this guy started liking Angel. And I don't even know who this guy was, to be honest with you. I can't even give you a name or remember what he even looked like. I just remember my cousin telling me that Ruby's boyfriend was either a brother or a close friend, and he came around the house because Ruby was coming around the house because that was Margaret's niece. And of course, that was okay if Ruby came around the house and brought her scandal over because that was Margaret's niece. It was always that kind of like a double standard. If I came around like by myself, or let's just say, for example, I came around with friends and stuff like that, I would probably be considered the worst person. But because that was Margaret's niece, it was more accepted. So then she came around with the guy, and then we had heard that Angel was hanging out with Ruby and the two guys, and she was hanging out with them, and I guess there was a kiss that happened. And I guess the kiss had happened, and Margaret had seen that that had happened. And then Margaret went in and told my Uncle Gilbert, hey, this is what's going on outside. And then I guess my uncle went outside and, you know, God forbid someone kiss Angel. And I don't know if it was on the lips or on the cheek. I don't know what happened. I guess he slapped her. And then I guess it was a big argument that went on. And then they went in the house. There was another argument that went on. All we know is that Angel left sometime in the middle of the night. She was gone.
Hearing the news that 15-year-old Angel had just left in the middle of the night after this altercation with her father over a kiss, Rebecca and other family members were immediately concerned, but they believed that Angel would contact them since they were so close. But as the days and weeks passed with no sign of Angel, they did what they could to try to track her down.
We thought for sure, like my grandmother, myself, and my dad, and even my mom, we thought, oh, Angel's going to call us because she knows that we would protect her. We wouldn't allow her to go back over there. All we received were a bunch of calls like someone was on the other line and hanging up. And for sure, we thought that was Angel. And then I don't know why my uncle didn't, my dad said, did you call the authority? And I remember the conversation of him saying, why didn't you call? You need to call them. And then he goes, well, you know, I don't know what went on the other line. I just remember my dad saying, you need to, you know, fucking call. And I remember us getting in the car, driving around and trying to look where Ruby lived at the time, trying to see if we saw Angel. And we did that for a few days with my grandmother and nothing. Because back then, you know, you didn't have cell phones or anything like that. So we drove around.
Rebecca and her family kept getting these calls to their house, and they were met with silence on the other end. They hoped that it was Angel calling and that she would let them know that she was okay, or tell them where she was so that they could go get her and keep her safe.
My mom would tell us, we're receiving a lot of crank calls, you know, like people on the phone and then hanging up. And we would say, Angel, is that you? It's okay. Don't be scared. You're not going to go back to your dad's house. Is this you, Angel? And then the call would die. And I remember those calls vividly because I was really praying that that would be my cousin coming home. We were just hoping that she ran away and just needed some time. But our thing, even before my grandmother died, we just never understood why my uncle never called the authorities immediately. I mean, I know that. I mean, I have kids of my own, and I know that if, like, I see them and everybody knows, like, I get paranoid. What happened? Why were you, you know, what are you doing? You know, I mean, I start screaming at them. But, like, why would you not call the authorities right away? Like, you would think, really, your kid is only going to cool off? Because I read the statement my uncle put out at Dateline, and it said that he wanted her to cool down and, you know, give her some time. She was probably at her friend's house. Really? You don't verify stuff like that? Who does that? Obviously, he did. And I just don't understand. We honestly, in our hearts, I could tell you right now that we thought that those crank calls were my cousin. And we kept telling the person on the other line, Angel, if this is you, you know, just answer, you know, just answer. Don't worry. You're not going to go back to your dad's house. My dad is going to protect you as much as he can. Because, I mean, she knew that he was out there, too. I said, but don't worry. We're going to be okay with our Grandma Janie. Don't worry. You're going to be fine. You're not going to go back to your dad's house. You don't have to deal with them, whoever it was. Because it was just kind of weird that when she ran away, we started getting those calls. But nobody would be on the other line. We would hear people hang up. So we never really knew, of course, you know, we're never going to know if that was really her or just by coincidence, some crank caller.
We weren't able to reach Gilbert and Margaret for an interview, but in a 2018 interview with Dateline, they stated that they thought Angel was at a friend's house and would return home after she had cooled off. Their delay in reporting Angel missing has always bugged Rebecca.
We've had detectives come to the house and ask, what do you think happened? They've already had the story, and I gave them my story. And I said, I don't know. It also boggled them why a father would wait 2 days before calling the authorities. And why, as a stepmother, why wouldn't you have reached out to the authorities yourself and talked to your husband? Were they waiting for some miracle? I don't get it. Why wouldn't you be that wife and say, hey, you need to call the authorities? You know, she's only 15 years old. You have to call. This is not right. Especially, he stated on the Dateline statement, if you look it up, it states there, Angel was never in trouble at school, which is correct. She never got in trouble. It's like knowing that and knowing because she kissed a boy, you're going to allow her to run away and not call the authorities to maybe track her down any sooner, knowing that you said yourself that your daughter was a good girl. And like I told the authorities when El Monte detectives came to talk to me at my house at one time, you know, why don't you guys investigate my uncle, her dad, and the stepmom? Why don't you start there? Because don't you find it kind of weird that they would not call the authorities right away and then she just disappeared? I said, who's to know she's not under their house, buried? I mean, supposedly they say that they'll never get rid of that house because they're praying and hoping that Angel would one day come back. I don't know. I just find that very hard to believe. And that's how I've always seen it as a child, as a young adulthood. And now, you know, at my age, I just think like, you know, you start going back and you're trying to put puzzles together, but it's been so many years. And it's like, how do we get closure?
Angel's Aunt Irma was not immediately made aware that Angel was missing. Irma told us about a call they got from Angel shortly before she disappeared and how she learned that her niece was missing.
A month prior to her disappearance, she called, Angel called my mom. And, you know, back then it was landline. And she had called my mom and said, Grandma, you know, can I come and stay with you? You know, my dad, we're having a lot of problems. Can I come and stay with you? My mom told her, of course you can, but, you know, we got to make sure it's okay with your dad. But, you know, let me talk to your dad. No, I don't want you to talk to him. You know, we're just having a lot of problems. And so then my mother said, well, we need to come down there and get you or whatever we need to do. You know, we'll help you. And so that was that. Well, we didn't find out that Angel was missing till months later. Because at the time, my sister was, I don't even know if she was in Arizona or I don't know where my sister was at the time. But we didn't come to find that Angel was missing till months later. My sister called us and told us, hey, Angel's been missing. We think she ran away from home with her boyfriend. So when they told us that Angel had disappeared or had left, her father had caught her kissing her boyfriend and he had beat the heck out of her. That's what Gussie, her little brother, that's what he said. He beat her up pretty bad, and that they even made her wash dishes that night. And that she went over at like 12 midnight, went to his bedroom, and see, Gussie was like 9 at the time, and she was 15. That she went into his room and told him, hey, brother, I'm leaving, but just remember that I love you, okay? And then she walked out, and that's the last time we've ever heard or seen of her.
With very little to go on in Angel's case, Rebecca has been left to wonder about all of the possible theories over the years.
Our biggest fear that she's gone. I don't know if she got picked up. We always talk about it. Did she get picked up in the middle of the night by some guy that did child trafficking, or this individual that literally the guy that she may have hooked up with was really that bad and took her to another country, and maybe something happened to her there, or she's living another life. But, you know, as an adult, I mean, wouldn't you want to come back and say hello, just find out how your family's been? Because you're an adult now. Now you don't have to see your father. You don't have to see your evil stepmother. You know, now you can come back and see your brothers and your cousins, you know, because we were very close. I mean, I don't understand why. And everybody thought for sure she would contact me because we were that close. She goes, oh no, she'll contact Becky first, no matter what. And, you know, we always thought that was the case. And one time my uncle Gilbert contacted my dad because they went down to identify a body that was very similar to Angel's. So my dad, I remember he went with him to see if that was her, and it was not her. It was not Angel's body.
Angel's Aunt Irma voiced some regrets to us for not doing more at the time to find her niece. But in hindsight, the whole situation seems fishy to her.
So at the time, you know, I had just gotten my degree, my first year teaching. I had my own 2 girls. I was living my life pretty much, you know what I'm saying? And I thought to myself, why wasn't I proactive? What happened? Why didn't I try looking for her or doing something, you know? And I thought, well, they didn't. They made it seem like, oh, she just ran off with her boyfriend, you know? They weren't looking for her. So see, this is where I think it's so fishy. And to this day, and till the day I die, I mean, I'm 63 years old, and her father has to know her whereabouts. Because you know what? He never once called to ask about her over here in El Paso. Don't you think that if your daughter's missing, you know, you would think, you know what, you guys are hiding her from me. You know, where is she? Why do you guys have her? That's me. I think he knows her whereabouts. I don't know what happened to her, or she couldn't have just vanished off the face of this earth. She couldn't have. They were not worried about looking for her. I don't know what to think. And every time we try to broach the subject and that I talk to him about it, you know, it's been years, and then, you know, I'll bring it up and I say, well, you know, have you ever tried this, or have you ever, because I even talked to a detective from El Monte. And I said, you know what? I kept calling him, and every day I would call him and call him. And I said, you know what? I have looked at Jane Doe's. If you guys, you know, don't want to, you know, investigate or find out what happened to her. Where is she? She couldn't have just disappeared. Finally, he just told me, you know what, ma'am? I would appreciate if you just stop calling me, because if I do find out anything, I'll let your nephew Gus know if I find out anything. And so I was like, well, okay. So I just stopped pestering the guy, you know. But according to my sister, which she's not all there. Ever since she was in that marriage, she just became this totally different person. And she lives here in El Paso now, and she's living in elderly housing and stuff. She tried calling the police. She tried contacting them. It just gave her the runaround, and we haven't heard anything, ma'am. You know, we'll get in touch with you if we hear anything about her, and just brushed her off. and it just dismissed her. And so they supposedly they questioned my brother-in-law, my ex-brother-in-law, and he even did a lie detector, and that they didn't find anything. But that's what I think is so fishy. Why did my nephew, I don't know, he just doesn't want to talk about it. Every time I ask him, you know, like, hey, well, have you ever tried to ask your dad? Because your dad has to know. I tell him, your dad has to know what happened to her.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. When Angel's brother Gus grew up and got married, his wife Viviana took an interest in finding answers as to what happened to the sister-in-law she never met. We spoke to Viviana, and she told us how she became interested in digging into this family mystery further.
When me and Gus first got married, we first had a daughter. And I just think that just having children, and then, I don't know, to me, it just bothers me. I was not there and I was not a part of the family. And really, I only know my husband's side of the story because he was the only one that was present. It seems like nobody really likes to talk about it, or nobody seems to talk about the incident or about her. So from what I know is that she had been caught by her stepmom outside with the boy. I'm not sure if she was kissing or, you know, they just found her outside talking to somebody, which she was not allowed to be talking to boys, I guess, at that time. So from what I understand, she called the husband from work and he came home and they got into an argument. And from my understanding, she was disciplined physically for that. And then from what Gus has told me, even though after she was beat, they still made her clean the kitchen up. And then from there, he doesn't remember seeing her again. They just told him that she ran away overnight or something like that. This has been such a painful topic for him because almost like little by little, he's opened up because I think he's always been scared to maybe realize that she's not with us anymore. So for a long time, it was like, yeah, she ran away. And I was like, well, you just can't run away at that age and then never come back. you know, now he's being a little bit more open and he'll tell me maybe my dad went too far. The worst has crossed his mind for sure. They don't really talk about her. Let me put it to you this way. If my husband would have never mentioned that she existed, and if I would have walked into my in-laws, I would have never known she existed. There's nothing in that household that speaks that she existed. Like not even a picture or, you know, some kind of shrine or nothing. And the very little times that my father-in-law has mentioned her, it just bothers me because I remember one time, it was years ago, he just said something. I remember him making a comment saying, well, now that everybody's older and we all have jobs, let's all pitch in and get a private investigator. And I don't know, if that was my daughter, there would be no stone left unturned. It's almost like every adult at that time really failed that child because there was nothing more done for her, you know. And if she was missing, I don't think that they pushed the police department to really look for her. I remember they reported my in-laws that they let her go and cool off at some one of her friend's house, and that they allowed it to spend the night there, whatever. Well, my understanding is that they didn't really let the kids spend the night anywhere. So that was a little bit like news to me too. Then they said that wherever she was at, the family was gone. And I'm just thinking, like, why didn't you ask the landlord or whoever lived at that house? Where did they go? Ask the neighbors. It's just too many unanswered questions. I don't want to blame somebody. I just feel like somebody knows something and they're not coming forward with it. I don't believe that she's disappeared and ran away and just is living her life. I don't believe that.
Viviana explained what this has been like for her husband, losing his big sister at such a young age.
When my husband was of age, when he was 18, one of his first tattoos was angel over his heart, because that's his sister, his protector when they were young, because she was like their mom once the mom left. And she was like his mommy. So when she disappeared, like, you have the heartbreak of not seeing your mom as a child. And then now your sister, which is your second mom, disappears. It's very heartbreaking. And they don't have anything to remember her. We even named our firstborn daughter Angelica after her. I knew that was going to be very important for him. So we named our first daughter after my missing sister-in-law. I don't know. I mean, I have a daughter, and if she would have went missing at that age, you know, you look everywhere. You start looking, you start asking, you push for answers. And I mean, now it's much easier because you could track people with social media and phones and whatnot. And I know it wasn't the same, but I've seen stories of parents that are active and they become these advocates, you know, like John Walsh. And I don't know. To me, that's why I say it seems like it's like everybody failed her. They didn't really make an effort. Why wouldn't you make a big effort or a big deal about it? There is definitely more questions than answers, and that's what doesn't make sense, to know what has happened to her and if she is alive somewhere, to hopefully find her. That's something that Gus has always said, like, I was her baby. If there was anybody that she would reach out to, it would be me. You know, I just listened to him, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's true. You know, she could reach out to you. She could find you on social media, because you're there. And if she wouldn't want anything to do with your father, then we would let him know, like, do not contact her because she doesn't want anything to do with you. And we can definitely do that. But all these years, and it's nothing. There's nothing. We've searched social media. We've Googled her name. We've tried to share when we see she's on the missing, unexploited. They did a flyer for her. We've shared that. Then other stories that have came up on, you know, on other social media account and we share it. So for me, it's more because I see the pain that he has, and I would want him to have his sister back.
Initially, Angel's brother Gus was hesitant to speak with us, because when he has spoken out about Angel in the past, some family members became upset with him. As I'm sure you can understand, this is a tricky situation to navigate for him, because he still maintains a relationship with his father and stepmother. But while we were speaking to Viviana, Gus got on the line and decided to speak with us.
I was the youngest out of the four of us. She was the second to oldest. I had my older brother. She kind of was like definitely the older sister that protected me. My older brothers were little jokesters, you know, always picking on me because I was the youngest. So she always kind of protected me from them. That was always nice of her. When we'd be watching TV, I remember her, you know, play with my ear. That was a little thing that she would do to me, and I'd love it because I thought it was so comforting. But yeah, she was definitely my older sister. I loved her so much, you know, like I always remember, you know, wanting to be around her. So yeah, as we got older, unfortunately, our household changed. The dynamics of our house changed dramatically once my dad remarried my stepmom. We went from playing out in the streets, living in East LA, you know, as long as we were home before dark. We lived a certain lifestyle like that because my dad was always working. I had my grandma Janie. My dad's mom was our babysitter for some time. But yeah, once he got married, then we moved to Almani. I had two stepbrothers. My mom, Margaret, my stepmom was a hardcore Christian. The dynamics changed. So it was like now my sister had to stop wearing pants and t-shirts and needed to wear dresses, and we needed to stay clean, and we couldn't play out in the street like we were used to. We had to be in the house, and we went to church every Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. It just put a lot more restrictions on us. Definitely my older brother, he really got in a lot of arguments with my parents just because, you know, they put a lot of restrictions on him that he wasn't used to. And obviously on my sister as well. They put a lot of restrictions on her that she obviously didn't agree with, but that's the way we just had to kind of cope with the situation we were put in, you know? So yeah, I just remember, I mean, I was real little when my sister ran away. I was small. I want to say I was, I think, second, third grade, you know? I don't know, I think that's about eight, 9 years old when the situation happened where, from what I was told, it sounded like there was an argument between my dad and my sister. I guess she was outside with some boys, one of my other cousins from my stepside. My dad apparently got upset and, you know, I guess he spanked her and sent her inside. And then ever since then, it seemed that night, she seemed to just was gone. It was really hard on me because I was used to her. I was used to seeing her and, you know, she was always my comfort zone in the family. I knew she loved me a lot because how me and her interacted all the time. So it took me a long time to really get over it or cope with it because I just needed that. And I felt like I lost that comfort that she would give me. I always thought too, when the people would say, you know, your sister ran away, she wanted to change her name, find a new family. But I mean, I know how much she adored me, and it was hard for me to actually accept that because I was like, no way she can stay away from me. You know, there's no way. She would reach out to me eventually. Down the line, she would reach out. She would definitely have to rekindle with me, is what I've always thought. But a part of my heart, too, science says, well, if that's the case, that hopefully she's just alive and well, and she is living somewhere else, and she is doing her own thing, and she did eventually just, you know, get over us. But, yeah, it's been very difficult. As I get older, I even feel kind of even worse about it, the situation, especially about my sister, because I used to think about her every day. As you get older, you kind of time just kind of, you know, you kind of forget the situation, you know, and it'll be, I went from thinking about her every day to thinking about her maybe, you know, once a week and then, you know, maybe once a month, and it'll be a whole year. Like, I can't believe I haven't thought about my sister until it's her birthday. You know, because now it's just like those are the February 24th. I never forget her birthday. But I try to remember her when people ask me, you know, or, you know, her name gets brought up. I name my daughter. I always told myself when I was growing up, if I ever have a daughter, that's my daughter's name. Because I never want to forget her, you know?
Gus told us that he's gone back and forth about what he thinks happened to his sister, Angel. He was just a child when this happened and only knew what he had been told about the situation. However, as he got older and had conversations with the police, his thoughts began to shift over time.
I have mixed opinions because I never thought my parents, you know, my stepmom and my dad would be involved until I spoke to police officers here at Almani, because they would ask me, were your parents ever abusive? And I said, well, they did spank us really a lot. And my stepmom was really, she loved to punish us, you know, go to your room, you're grounded for a week. That was easy for her to do. You know, my dad, when he, something he didn't like, he would definitely, you know, he had a paddle. He literally had a wooden paddle and engraved all of our names on it. And every time we would get in trouble, he would spank us with this paddle. My dad was never, he never knew about timeout. He never knew about talking something out. He was just first to just spank, just hit. So, I mean, when the officer said, would it be possible that your dad maybe got out of hand because he got so enraged and he might have hit her? And I said, yeah, it is possible. And I didn't really think of it until they actually asked me. So a part of me does kind of maybe think, yeah, maybe my dad got out of hand and maybe my stepmom assisted with what happened. And it's just something they have between them and they never want to say. And they're telling us she ran away when yet maybe she didn't. Maybe something happened and they're just covering it up. Yeah. So that's something that crosses my mind now. And me and my wife, we watched, you know, these forensic files and all these other shows. And whenever a mother and a father lose a child, they put out flyers. They go looking. The police department said, you know, your sister was gone for 2 days and your parents didn't reach out. And I was just thinking, why would they do that? And then you would see, you would have a memorial picture or something in your house of your daughter knowing that you miss her. There's not one picture of my sister in my parents' house. And I even asked them, Dad, how come you never put up a picture of Angel? It's too hard to see. That's one scenario. And then the other scenario is that, you know, maybe she did run away and maybe she did change her name and change her identity and is living another life. So I'm mixed between the two but it's hard to prove and it's hard to know, you know, what exactly did happen. So I don't want to jump to a conclusion as well and start hating my dad and my stepmom if that's not really true, you know.
We also spoke to Angel's mom, Maria. She told us that she's hopeful that her daughter is out there somewhere alive. Maybe she did just take off and could be alive with a family of her own.
My daughter, Angel, was a very, very good little girl. She never got into any kind of trouble. She had a very jolly personality. I mean, she made friends easily. She was always happy. She's very rare for you to see her sad or anything like that. She was always a very happy little girl. And when we divorced, he said that she was dating an older man and that she was against it, that she didn't want him. She didn't want her to see this older boyfriend of hers. And he says that he slapped her. I think he did more than slap her. I'm not sure. And my firstborn son said that he left $65 for her in case she ever needed it, but she could take it with her. And he said that she did take it with her. I don't know how he knows that. So I don't know. I don't know what her state of mind was when she ran away, you know, but I'm thinking she was not happy. I know that she was strong enough to leave a situation and she was not happy. That's what I think, you know, she just wasn't happy. I'm hoping and praying that she took off with her boyfriend and they're happily married and they have kids, and that's what I'm hoping. Because I feel in my heart that, you know, that I'm going to find her, because I see sometimes these things on TV where they have, where they found lost, you know, people that have been missing for 50 years. I feel like I'm going to hold her in my arms again. She was very mature. You know, Angel, by the time she was 5 years old, she could cook breakfast. She could cook rice. She was very, very independent. And she took care of Gabriel and us. So she would always, you know, give them breakfast. You know, she would always take care of them, make them lunch. She was just a full-grown adult by the time she was 10, 11. And she could do everything on her own. She was very independent. That's why I'm proud of her, that she did this move and left a situation where she wasn't happy. Her father was very mean to her.
After we spoke to Angel's cousin Rebecca the first time, she talked with her mom about Angel and how we were working on covering her story. That's when her mom brought up something that Rebecca had forgotten.
I was so young. I was 14 at the time. I knew there were major problems. As a child of that age, you know, you really don't get into all the adult conversations and, you know, unless you're there listening and stuff like that. But now that I am an adult and I think back and, you know, you start putting pieces and puzzles together, a lot just doesn't make sense. I do recall, I'll go back to the first time she ran away. I was speaking with my mother and she reminded me of something. She's never really understood many pieces that are missing, but she does remember. She just says, she goes, remember when your cousin first left her home? And my mom doesn't recall a year or anything like that. She just says that she remembers Angel running away from home. And she came to our house, actually. When she ran away and came to our house in Boyle Heights, we lived in Boyle Heights at the time, and she lived in Almani. We don't know how she got there. My mom just doesn't remember how she got there. I do recall my father and my mother saying that they were already making room for Angel. When she got there, they said, you know, we're not going to send you back. We don't want to send you back. We already know the problems. We know the issues that the kids are having, you're having there. It's not a very welcoming home. They were preparing room for my cousin to stay. So what my dad did is what I think any adult would do. Hopefully, he called my uncle, his brother, and my father called Gilbert to tell him, hey, Angel's here. We know the problems. You know, there was conversation. Everybody knew the problems that they were having. And he said, she's going to stay here with us. But I'm letting you know that she doesn't want to go back. So then with that said, my mom said that she was really upset at the fact that my uncle said, no, I'm going to go pick her up. I'm going to bring her back home. Because your daughter is not a good influence on my daughter. So he picked her up for that reason. So, because I was, you know, I was into rock music, disco music, you know, your regular kid. So my mother was like, how stupid is that? What do you mean? I mean, come on. She would be cared for, loved for, and she wouldn't have to worry about all the drama that she was already experiencing in her home. If I was such a bad kid then, you know, the first time Angel ran away and she got taken back home, the second time that she ran away because she was doing something that, you know, my uncle said he didn't think it was right, then she ran away, but they didn't go look for her for 2 days later. And I read his own words that I didn't go look for her because we wanted her to cool off. Well, first of all, who was this family she ran away to? Because there's no names given. Like, who was his family? There was no name in the interview that she ran away with so-and-so's family. Did they know this family? And it's like, you know, what really was appalling to my mom, it's like he would allow her to run away for 2 days with this family and not allow her to stay with her own family that he would have more control of. He would be able to check on her. He would be able to stop by at any time. Versus some stranger, and you let her cool off at a stranger's house where almost anything can happen? She said, that doesn't make sense to me. And that's never made sense to me.
This one key piece of the initial story about Angel running away and staying with a friend has stuck out to Rebecca, especially as she's gotten older. It just doesn't add up to her that they said that she was with a friend. And then when they went to this alleged friend's house, it was vacant. Did this friend even exist?
I've never got a name. No one's ever known the name of the neighbor. I don't even know what street, what address. Apparently, when they went, when I'll say they, I'm assuming it was law enforcement and my dad's brother, Gilbert, that they went and that there was nobody there. It was like they've gotten up and then they moved. So I don't, you know, that to me, I don't know. That's kind of strange. Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I don't know about that. I know that that didn't make sense to a lot of us. So, and even now me as an adult, I just, you know, I think back and I'm like, how does that make sense? Like, how does somebody just get up and move like that? I get it. They got up and moved within those 2 days. I don't know. That was weird. But here's another question. How does my father's brother know that they were at a, she was at a friend's house cooling off? Who told him that?
We did contact the El Monte Police Department in order to inquire about what was done to look for Angel back in 1985 and what they are continuing to do today. But they declined our request for an interview and also declined our records request. At this point, the assumption is that they probably labeled Angel as a runaway and not much investigative work was done initially.
I think, to me, they may have failed interviewing and pushing it. But like everybody tells me, when you don't have an active parent pushing, then how do you expect law enforcement to also push? My dad passed away. Did he ever get interviewed? I don't even recall him ever getting interviewed. Did my grandmother get interviewed? I don't ever recall that ever happening. I don't ever remember any of that. Did my mom get interviewed? I don't remember her. She would have told me, yeah, we got interviewed. El Monte, back in the 80s, they're probably like, okay, well, she's a runaway. She's a runaway teenager, and that's it. So they didn't push the issue because she became a runaway. But at one point, when does it not become a runaway situation?
As the years passed with no sign of Angel, her family members began to pass away without ever knowing what happened to her. For Rebecca, this has only added to her resolve to find out what happened to her cousin, Angel.
My dad had died due to him being on drugs and alcohol. He didn't have any more liver, so he ended up passing from that. He ended up dying at 43, very young. But I know when I would go visit my dad when he would be high or drunk, he'd always say, what happened to my Angel? Why did my brother marry that stupid woman? The worst thing that happened to this family. We're dysfunctional, but we were still a family. Before my grandmother passed away, before she got dementia, she also said, you know, whatever you do, try to find out whatever happened to Angel. And she would pray and pray, and we would sit there and pray. And she moved back home to Texas. So when I would go visit my grandmother all the time, you know, that was like one of the first topics that would come up. Do you know anything? Did you happen to hear something? And there was always something. But I know before she passed on, she wanted closure pertaining to my cousin, and she didn't get that closure. This is a very, very old case. And unfortunately, it is a very cold case at that. I mean, there's never been any real lead. I mean, there's been like a lead here, a lead there, but nothing to say that she was actually seen. So, I mean, that makes it for me even a colder case because you talk about not even seeing her and you're hearing about rumors that she could. And the word could is, well, she could be there. No one's seen her there. You know, when you see someone there and there's a sighting of somebody or her, it makes a world of difference to, I believe, any case.
So what happened to Angel back in November of 1985? We have this story that she was caught kissing a boy, but we're lacking a lot of details in this case. Who was the boy? What was his name? Did the police ever question him? We also have this information that her dad says she went to cool off at a friend's house, but when the friend's home was checked, it was vacant. We also don't know the name of this friend or if it's been established that they existed. Did Angel run away because her home life was so unhappy? If she did, why didn't she ever contact her other family members that she was so close to, like her cousin Rebecca or her baby brother Gus? Could she have run away and some harm came to her after she left home? We know she did run away one time prior and went to Rebecca's home. They planned to let her stay there, but her dad came and got her. Could she have expected this to happen a second time if she went to their house? And what about those phone calls that Rebecca's family got after she disappeared? Could that have possibly been Angel, or maybe someone else who wanted them to think it was her? Why didn't Angel's father ever contact Angel's family members in El Paso to see if maybe she had gone there after she ran away? Could the physical punishment from her father gone too far that night? Was the runaway story just a story after all? Angel has been absent from the lives of her family for so long, but they aren't giving up their quest for answers. They believe someone out there must know something. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Angelica Longoria, please contact the El Monte Police Department at 626-580-2100 or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST.
I'm just going based on like what I remember and what I see and how I feel and, you know, how angry it feels. Like I can't find any closure for my cousin. Like I just want some miracle to happen where even if she's gone or passed on, and I sit here sometimes at night and I think, okay, Angel, what exactly happened to you when you left those doors? What evil sheep came across you that if something happened to you so bad? You know, we watch all these movies and all these things about kidnapping, and I just think, like, my mind just goes, and it's so vivid, and I just try to think, like, what happened to you that night? Was it that night that led you to death, or was it months later? I just think of all these scenarios, and I ask God to please help us, but nothing has come forward. Nothing.
He knows what happened to her. He knows. And I'll say that till the day I die, that he knows what happened to her.
That brings us to the end of episode 239. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Texas. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.